Welcome to the Drive Phase Podcast, the best podcast for information on issues surrounding sports business in the Caribbean. On the Drive Phase, we have discussions with sport administrators, coaches, athletes, and various stakeholders in the sporting industry and examine their contribution to sports and entrepreneurship. Here's your host, Dalton Myers.
Thanks, Colleen. In this episode, we look at sports branding and sponsorship. And here to discuss it is Andre Roper. Andre is currently the brand manager for Restaurants of Jamaica. He has 20 years' experience in marketing, communication, sponsorship, and events management, and has been involved in the field of telecommunications, sponsorship, marketing, sports betting, and gaming. Of course, he's a passionate sports lover and sports history fanatic with a particular love for cricket, basketball, football, the NFL, and track and field. I'm not too sure which one are the cricket teams or which one are the series that he's following now. Andre, welcome.
Glad to be here on the Drive Phase podcast for the first time.
Yeah, well, glad that you decided to join us. Listen, so you're a proud Campion College old boy.
Yes, proud. I couldn't be prouder.
All right. A Liverpool fan, which is very important.
Definitely.
A Miami Dolphins fan.
Struggling. Hard to keep the faith, but just as proud.
A 76ers fan.
We're getting back there. We're getting there now.
And
look out for us this year.
And a West Indies cricket supporter.
No comment.
So listen, so you love pain, basically. You're a sucker for sports pain. Because none of these teams, well, except for Liverpool.
Except for Liverpool, that's right.
So after Campion, you went to University of the West Indies.
Went to University of the West Indies, played Junior Cup, intercollegiate cricket. Those are some good times as well. Mm-hmm. Definitely enjoyed my time playing cricket on campus. Cressa was also on the team as well. He was one of my teammates for those few years that I was on campus. Definitely enjoyed those years.
And that kind of just set the stage for what you wanted to get into, because you were doing media and what we know now as media and communications.
Correct.
At Carimac.
Definitely.
Kind of just talk to us a little bit about those.
Definitely. So I actually went to Carimac with the intention to get into a career in advertising. I was passionate about advertising in high school, and it was a field which really, really appealed to me. I had a passion for sports as well. I was the son of a cricket coach. My father has been a cricket coach for years. My father played senior cup back in his day. So I had the passion and the love for sports. I grew up in a sporting family. My brother played football at Jamaica College. My brother played club basketball in his day. You know, before basketball was as popular as it is right now. My brother was playing at the time Division I basketball for his club. And he was a national youth table tennis champion way, way back in his day. So I come from a sporting family, but I had the interest in journalism. So I was toying with the idea when I got into Carimac. I knew I was going to do all the necessary, you know, go through all the necessary electives and all the necessary courses. I wanted to make sure that I was as well-rounded as possible. So I figured that Carimac at the time would have given me the best opportunity to get a solid foundation in public relations, marketing. There were some sports media courses at the time.
Yeah, and of course, Christine Cummings and,
yes,
and Andrew
yes.
Brown had their course.
Yes, Christine taught me sports and media at the time. Uh-huh. But of course, I also wanted to get a foundation in television, radio, print, and to some extent, graphic design. And I got all those, I learned all those principles, all those core principles during my years at Carimac. So it gave me a good foundation. It gave me a good platform. Uh-huh. And it even at 22 years old when I left and I finished my degree, I was able to I had a few options at the time, you know.
Right.
I thought about going directly into journalism, going into the sports media, which was appealing, but then I stuck with advertising because I figured that going into advertising and by extension PR would have given me an opportunity to work with a lot of different companies, a lot of different brands by way of the clients that I would have engage with. Figured it would have given me a much more of a broader scope to develop as a marketing professional. As much as I love journalism, I thought it would have probably been a little bit more limiting at the time.
Okay.
So I said, in order to hit the ground running, you know, go into advertising. And I have to say it was a good decision at the time. I got a great start at Pro Communications, working in PR and advertising with Jean Laurie Chin. It was a small firm, so I was able to really learn a lot because he had to do a lot. Mm-hmm. And one of the things at the time, interestingly, was one of our biggest clients back in the day was Lasco. And Lasco being the huge national brand that it was and still is, from the sponsorship standpoint, they were involved in all aspects of Jamaican life, from entertainment to culture to sports, gospel. You know, they had Teacher of the Year Award, the Pharmacist of the Year Award, the Police Officer of the Year Award, and then they had the Lasco, my favorite event at the time, which I was involved in, the Lasco Club Championships, the Inter Club Track and Field Championships, which was, that was really my first exposure to sponsorship and PR activation around a sporting event, was when Lasco was sponsoring the club championship. And I remember going to that event and seeing all the track and field athletes and, you know, being involved in the activation and the coverage and the sponsorship around that. This would have been back in about 2001 or thereabouts, 2001, 2002. And then, of course, in addition to Lasco, we had Digicel as a client. And so back in 2001, Digicel was just entering the Jamaican market. That's and correct. So they were looking to get themselves entrenched and get themselves really established in the Jamaican marketplace. And so what better way to do that than through sponsorship?
That's amazing. And I mean, fast forward, you also then went to Supreme Ventures.
Correct.
To do a lot of work with Supreme Ventures. And at that point.
But first, Sportsmax came before Supreme Ventures. How could we forget?
How could we forget Sportsmax? Sportsmax was before.
Sportsmax, yes. Sportsmax
Supreme Ventures. And those two are crucial, eh?
Those two are very crucial. Leaving the advertising industry where, you know, I got some exposure to sports marketing and sports sponsorship, but limited because of the type of clients I had at the time. Going on to Sportsmax now. Sportsmax, joining the Sportsmax team in 2003, Sportsmax was less than a year old. And at the time, they were building out their sports marketing department. And that department was responsible for building and creating events that would provide value for sponsors, corporate sponsors, and would also provide good content for the channel. And so that small team at the time, which has grown into a much bigger team now, but at the time we worked with organizations like Jamaica Basketball Association in revamping what is now called the NBL.
We worked with
Jamaica Cricket Association in revamping the club competition, creating the Super Cup. We got millions and millions of dollars in sponsorship from different companies such as Supreme Ventures, KFC, Flow, then called B-Mobile at the time, to try to revamp these competitions, revamp the marketing, revamp the whole look and feel of these competitions. So from 2003 to 2008, I was project manager in charge of sports marketing. And that was really where I really got engulfed into the world of sports marketing, sports television, sports media, that entire Sportsmax journey, not just working on so many sporting events, but also being involved from the production side and seeing how all these programs were created, from script writing to filming, editing, seeing the entire process, and being involved in all elements of the process. So that was really, those were really some informative years at Sportsmax.
Talk to us up now about the Supreme Ventures part, because again, betting in sports was something new to the Jamaican landscape.
Yes,
and you were a part of this, working with many persons, including Carleen Edwards and that group.
Yes. So at the time, this would have been 2009 after I left Sportsmax. And I left because, you know, I wanted a new challenge. I wanted to branch out of media, sports marketing, and embrace a new challenge. And at the time, if you said sports betting to anyone in Jamaica, they would have thought of horse racing. They would have thought of horse racing. And if you said betting and gaming, they would have thought of either the casino business or Lotto, Cash Pot, Pick 3.
Right.
So what we, you know, at the time, fixed odds sports betting, as we call it. Right. Fixed odds sports betting was pretty new. You had bookmakers in the across the island who were offering it, but it never got nearly as much publicity or as much coverage as the more the more big ticket or the more popular games, as like the ones I just mentioned, that Supreme Ventures has done a great job of making a part of Jamaican life. When you say cash pot, yeah. I mean, it's a part of life. But in 2009, at the time, joining Just Bet, that was a tremendous opportunity. Coming in from the ground level, from pre-launch stage, helping to really build a brand from scratch, and helping to not just create and help to build out the sports betting industry as it is now, but really to educate customers and educate the public as to, you know, the fact that sports betting is one of the biggest businesses on the planet.
Yeah.
And Supreme Ventures played a big role in that, because at the time, you know, they had this, a lot of people had this notion of sports betting as being kind of this underground, almost dingy, unreputable. Mm-hmm. And some people still have that perception of sports betting.
I was just about to say that.
Yeah. And, you know, historically, because of the association with crime and the association with even match fixing, and, you know, in other sports, not just cricket, but in the NFL, in baseball.
The entire world of sports.
The entire world of sports. So the association between sports betting and match fixing and illegal activities, that has, from time to time, put the industry of sports betting in a really negative light. But fact of the matter is, it's big business. It is now governed and monitored quite extensively, quite intensively in all the markets. And we see where it has matured and it has grown to become a multi-billion dollar industry, to the point where in the United States, it's now legal in as many, you know, more states than ever before. Of course, in Jamaica, when the legislation passed in 2009, it was the dawn of a new era in sports betting.
But isn't
in Jamaica.
That, yeah, but isn't that part of the challenge now for us though, Andre, as we talk about sports betting, that I think we have put in so much tight legislation in trying to protect, I guess, the sporting industry in Jamaica, that we are so tight-knitted and we may not benefit as much as we can, and also can create more room for the underground market, for the black market, because sports betting is here to stay.
Yeah. So that the passage of the legislation to make sports betting legal in Jamaica, it was a lengthy process. It was not a short process. I can tell you, because I joined Supreme Ventures in 2009. It was a year before we were able to launch Just Bet in Jamaica. And even before that, the license had been purchased years earlier, but it just took a while. Legislation really took a while, and there were a number of factors involved.
Yeah.
But and even now, I would say it's now at the stage where it's allowed the industry to mature.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, there were challenges, for example, with betting on local sports,
right,
for different reasons. You do have bookmakers now who offer bets on things like Premier League and other local leagues. So I would say it has come a far way. I know that this, you know, all the bookmakers involved, whether Supreme Ventures, Anybet, Islandbet, they have all carved out a nice niche for themselves. Online sports betting is now a reality in Jamaica. So you see where the betting market has really, really grown. You see where things like fantasy sports have also continued to really, really grow and grow and grow. Fantasy
and
Premier
League. Earning from fantasy
and
sport.
Definitely.
Not just the recreational myself.
Yeah, not just the recreational benefit that comes from fantasy sports where, you know, you have all the leagues that offer pretty attractive monetary incentives for persons who do well, whether fantasy Premier League, fantasy NFL, fantasy basketball. So it's part and parcel. As the business of sports continue to grow, sports betting industry will continue to grow, fantasy sports will continue to grow. And it's just for, you know, those, you know, we see how the Americans and the Europeans have done a great job in maximizing, and we see how the players have done a great job in you know, making sure that they capitalize and they create their own personal brands, and they make sure that they maximize on, you know, because, you know, it's a limited amount of time, especially for players. And so, but definitely it has gone from just these sports being played for recreation and a few of the elite stakeholders making big money to a lot of people making a lot of big money.
But part of the challenge though, Europa, is that the the players here in Jamaica and probably in the rest of the Caribbean don't always earn a lot depending on the sport. Mm-hmm. And so there aren't a lot of restrictions for them to fix a match.
Mm-hmm.
You know, meaning that the punishment either from their clubs or otherwise are not necessarily restricted because you're not making a lot of money. So if you fix a match, you may just end up earning more, way more than you're earning playing a good 90 minutes of all game.
Yeah, and I remember while I was at Supreme Ventures, that was one of our considerations.
Yeah.
Persons used to ask us, why don't you have a betting on the Premier League, local Premier League? And it was our assertion, our stance at the time, that we didn't want to risk opening a can of worms. At the time, and even up to now, the Premier League is not a fully professional league.
Yeah, no,
so,
it isn't.
And we know the situation with players, and we know the financial situation with the league and with a lot of the clubs, and so we felt that it was dangerous to start offering bets on a local Premier League because it could open, you know, it could open us up. Mm-hmm. To or open the league up to, or open the matches up to being manipulated, simply because you have a situation where players are not earning enough to really create a livelihood. You know, anything is possible at that point. A man realize him can earn a couple hundred thousand by mm-hmm. fixing a match, you know, that type of thing. So at the time we took that stance to right. not offer. But you had other bookmakers at the time who decided to go ahead and just yeah. lay everything out. Local Premier League, no problem. So every
everything.
Week. And not just that, international online sites have been offering bets on the local Premier League for years.
For a long while.
Yeah, Bet365 and a number of others have been offering bets on local Premier League for years.
And that's what a lot of our Jamaicans don't realize, mm. that whether or not we have legislations here that open up the betting and gaming industry, that overseas people are actually making money
for sure.
from sports in Jamaica.
Yeah, and the odds are pretty good actually.
Right.
I mean, I know because it's something that I've monitored for years.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely. It's taken a long time for us to get to this point, but definitely I would say there is definitely still room for growth. We'd still, as long as these leagues, however, mm-hmm. are semi-professional, then you always have to be careful about local bookmakers offering bets
okay.
On local leagues. Right?
So after Supreme Ventures, quickly you mm-hmm. took a little break. From the quote unquote 9 to 5.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And then you went to Restaurants of Jamaica, where you're a brand manager. Not just sports, but sport is a big part of it because, you know, you've been
yes.
at launch for schoolboy football and, mm-hmm. and many other sporting events in Jamaica.
Definitely. Restaurants of Jamaica has been one of the foremost supporters and sponsors of sports, especially youth sports in Jamaica, for a number of years, from well before my time.
Mm-hmm.
Especially youth basketball. For years, we sponsored the basketball league, track and field, football. This is probably the second or third iteration of KFC being a sponsor of schoolboy football. And I mean, definitely, you see a brand like KFC that is an international brand, but it is seen as it's really seen as a part of Jamaica,
mm.
and a big part of that is because of how it has, apart from the food, apart from the fact that clearly the food is loved by Jamaicans, but a big part of it is how the brand has basically supported and endorsed and helped to grow and develop and propel forward basically all industries, education, gospel music, entertainment, dancehall music, culture, you name it.
Right.
So the brand has been a supporter of all those industries and all those elements of society that are real, that really matter to Jamaica and really bring Jamaicans together or create a bit of opposition, healthy opposition, and sports is right up there. So whether it is the Olympic team, whether it is youth basketball, whether it is cricket, whether it, I mean, all through the years, KFC, and to some extent Pizza Hut as well, because Pizza is also a part of the Restaurant Jamaica family. But I mean, definitely sports provides such a platform for connecting with your audience, for not just promoting brands more to new products, but in some instances making a difference. Because I'll give you an example, something like the Star Search Camp, the Youth Star Search Camp, which is the annual camp where the top basketball players at the youth level come together every year. They get coaching from local and international coaches. Scouts come down from overseas colleges and cities, players every year. KFC has been the major sponsor of this camp for almost 15 years. And we have tons of kids getting scholarships out of that camp, including kids who have gone on to play Division One, kids who have gone on to the NBA right out of our Jamaican shores, and kids who have gone on to play professionally in Europe, South America, Asia. And all this is because of sponsors like Restaurants of Jamaica, who believe in sports as a platform for giving youngsters a chance.
All right, but let me touch on that, Andre. So how do you determine, as a brand manager, a person in the industry, determine what events you're going to sponsor? So if there's someone out there who's listening and saying, okay, cool, well, I need to get through to Andre, how do you make that determination, and how do you deal with activation at these respective events to ensure that you're getting good return on investment?
So as you can imagine, we get a ton of
requests.
Yeah. We get hundreds, literally hundreds of requests for partnerships, sponsorships. But where sports are concerned, there has to be an alignment. There has to be ideally you're looking for a sporting property that has some sort of national interest, and something which, a property which really galvanizes the country, galvanizes our customer base, and really either brings people together and, really creates that atmosphere and creates that platform that will be beneficial to everybody, that will really, create excitement, create a passion. So at the top of the list, of course, track and field, football, and to some extent basketball. You're looking for sporting properties that are going to tap into our customer base as well.
Right.
So it's not to say that we would never sponsor a golf tournament or a squash event or a tennis event, because we sponsor those events from year to year.
Right.
We sponsor lawn tennis, we sponsor swimming, we sponsor boating events. We pretty much have our brand aligned to a majority of the sports. The level of which that investment is realized, though, it has to do with how well that sporting property is going to allow us to connect to our consumers. It has to do with what type of impact that sport is going to have nationally or internationally. And of course, it has to do with return on investment. From time to time, we'll align the sponsorships with some sort of return. It could be a sales component, not all the time, but there are times when that happens. But definitely we're looking to see how well they align. There has to be an alignment. There has to be some sort of a marriage. And in terms of activation now, it's one thing to sponsor an event, but you don't just sponsor an event and sit back. You sponsor an event and you have to go and execute, and you have to go and make sure you get the full return. And so for every dollar you spend to sponsor an event, you may spend $2 or $3 or $4, not just to activate, but to assist with advertising and public relations support and PR support and digital support. Because you may sponsor an event, and at the end of the day, the sporting organization will only have so many funds available to deal with the operation side of the event and actually make the event happen. It's up to the sponsor to make sure that all the other marketing elements are realized. And so, schoolboy football, for an example, the sponsors have all come together to ensure that ISA has enough funds to make the competition run. And, make sure that all the basics and all the components needed to execute the competition from start to finish are done. However, in addition to those sponsorship monies which have come through, which is the case with any sponsorship, the sponsors always come to the table and invest more in things like fan activation, digital promotion, incentives for additional incentives for players, prizes for fans, I mean, additional advertising, additional marketing support. So once you come on and sponsor, it's up to you as a sponsor to make sure that you maximize your investment. And so it will come at an additional cost, but it will help ensure that you get the return on your investment. Once you, as a sponsor, once you make the determination that you're going to invest in a property, you have to go all the way. So you have to manage your budget. Mm-hmm. You have to know that in on top of whatever you're sponsoring, you are going to invest an additional X to make sure that you get your return and to make sure that the your customer base and the patrons are satisfied. So something like schoolboy football, for example, at the final, the patrons will pay to come into a Manning Cup final or a Champions League final. The sponsors have all paid to make sure that ISA has funds to rent the venue,
right,
to pay all the officials, make sure that prize money is there for the winning team and the runner-up team. All the operational costs are covered. Fine. However, to make sure that there is a complete fan experience, which will be a proper representation of the sponsors' brands, mm-hmm. and will leave the patrons satisfied, there has to be further investment. And usually there is. So whether it's artists at halftime, whether it's giveaways right through the day, whether it's a pre-game show, whether it's a post-game show. As a sponsor, you have to make a determination that these investments are necessary, because generally speaking, what normally happens is you have 3, 4, maybe 5 sponsors, maybe more. Everyone wants to make sure that they get their pound of flesh. Mm-hmm. Everyone wants to make sure that they connect with their consumers and connect with the patrons on the day. And everybody wants to make sure that when they leave that event, they leave that event with your brand still in their mind. Mm-hmm. Whether they leave and say, boy, they were KFC was giving away vouchers at the match, but I never get one. I'm going to go KFC, you know, you know, man. Something as basic as that, which happens a lot. But you make that decision that you have to invest to get the best return. Make sure that you leave your customers and your patrons satisfied. You make sure that after the event is finished and patrons have that recollection or that brand recall, mm-hmm. your brand was top of mind, being associated with whatever the property was.
Well, let me touch on another part of that then. One of the things that I know that you do blogging, you have done commentary, or I call it statistics on radio program for NFL, NBA, etc., meaning that you focus a lot on the analytical part of sports. Mm-hmm. How challenging is that in the Caribbean landscape to look at our sporting event and touch on statistics to make analysis or just to do activation?
It's somewhat challenging for local sports. Mm. I remember going back to my Sportsmax days when we used to cover the NBA, the local basketball mm-hmm. league, and we had to produce pregame shows, produce highlight shows, produce coverage of the live games. And I remember getting proper in-depth statistics was a challenge, and it is sometimes a challenge with local leagues, but of course you know that when you're talking about NBA, NFL, Premier League, Champions League, Major League Baseball, whatever the case is, there is no end to data that is available.
Especially baseball,
which is so numbers driven and so data driven. There is no end to the amount of data you can get, because couple reasons. One, a lot of these sports have had, over time, they have had a lot more resources to capture data over the years, but they have been very numbers driven and statistics driven historically. Mm-hmm. So the numbers have just been a part and parcel of the history and the tradition of all these sports.
And that's what make them what they are in terms of being able to generate revenue, because they can sell that statistics or use that statistics in terms of, you know, fan support or activation, etc., isn't it?
Definitely. All these things play a part in helping to build a property, build popularity, build support. Mm. So, you know, using numbers, using data to kind of build that tradition. When you hear that Jimmy Cow College won the Manning Cup 5 times in 6 years, or, you know, you hear how many times Kingston College has won the corporate area basketball title, or how many times Kingston College won Sunlight. All, you know, all these statistics and all these accolades, they feed into, you know, creating that whole experience for fans and, you know, making the whole experience more memorable. And, you know, in a lot of respects, these statistics exist, you know, but from my experiences, they are not readily available online. So if I want to go online right now and I want to find the winners of every Sunlight Cup or every George Headley going back to 1900, I can't readily find that information with one or two clicks. I can go online and find who won the Florida State High School Basketball Championship every year for the last 50 years.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? And so it has always been my challenge. And I know the statistics exist. They may exist at ISSA. They may exist at the respective governing body. But just being readily able to access historical statistics and numbers for local leagues, high school, club competition online, not where it should be. And that would really be something which I think would add a nice dimension to being able to build the popularity of sports and being able to really ensure that, you know, we kind of fashion the whole support into a, you know, to a level where it really is. But that's one thing that's missing, the easy online accessibility of all this data and all these statistics and all these numbers of our local leagues and competitions online.
I mean, that's one thing. You've been in sports for a while. What other, you know, advice would you give to member associations, governing body, from a sponsor's perspective? Some of the things that you wish you could see to make life a little bit easier, certainly for you on that side, and just for the sporting landscape.
Yeah, well, I understand the challenges. I understand the challenges, especially for sports which are considered
non-traditional
sports. I understand the challenge. I understand the challenge. It's a chicken and egg situation, because you need sponsor support to help to build the sports to a level where you can start gaining more sponsors and you can start building out your program. I find that in a lot of instances, sponsors have been burnt in the past, investing funds and not seeing their investment come to full fruition. And in some instances, you see a case where governing bodies or local sporting bodies simply don't have the resources to dedicate to things like, you know, marketing, sponsorship management. So you may have persons who, God bless them, have a full-time job and are trying to run an organization part-time, which is the reality, because the body might just not have enough resources to hire full-time persons. So it's very, very challenging. I would the one thing I would definitely urge whichever sporting organization is, just start with a vision and a clear plan for the organization that shows how you're going to build out your organization and show how you're going to give sponsors value for their investment in the short term and the long term. That's where I would definitely start with. Utilize digital, utilize social media, utilize the inexpensive tools that will allow you to grow your organization, grow your product, grow your different competitions without having to invest a ton of money. Definitely, I would drop that in there as well. And definitely, transparency is key. I know that sponsors in the past have had problems with transparency with a number of organizations, so that goes without saying. But definitely, I'd say the vision, the plan, showing that you have a clear vision, showing that you're willing to invest in personnel, if even on a contract basis, to manage sponsorship and manage marketing and manage the sponsors' entitlements and the sponsors' activation, so that sponsors can feel that they are being taken care of.
Let me just ask you a question that I ask most persons who have sat in that chair. If there is a youngster who wants to get into your area, you know, they enjoy following you on social media, they enjoy your sports travel, which is something you take very seriously in terms of just enjoying the sport, what would be some of the advice that you'd give them in terms of, you know, that young Karamak grad coming up and looking forward to getting into the working world?
Yeah, well, as I said, be prepared to work at small companies, small firms, small agencies, be prepared to volunteer. Be prepared to go out and work as a PA on the production of a match. Be prepared to do things like internships where you don't get much in return, but you get valuable experience. I'd say, don't get caught up in trying to get a start at a big company. It won't always happen. We know that those opportunities are very limited. But definitely, if you can get an internship, whether paid or unpaid, try to get one. If you can volunteer at events, concerts, promotions, parties, try to get yourself in that frame of mind. Try to get yourself in the door where you're getting the underground experience, where you're beefing up your resume even at an early age, so that by the time you are 22 or 23, you have some events that you can show that, okay, you know, you have that experience. But don't be afraid to get out there, get some experience, if even it's unpaid. I know it's difficult, especially at that, especially when you might have student loans to repay. Believe me, I've been there. But sometimes you need a little luck. But as I said, definitely be prepared to go out there, volunteer, and just get some experience wherever you can get it.
I didn't ask this earlier, and of course I have to ask it now. What is that one project that you have worked on that you think is just to this day is one of your best projects ever that you talk about? You know, it's a big project. I mean, you've worked on so many over the years.
There have been a few. I would say right up there at the top would actually be probably my first major project in the working world, and that would have been the Digicel launch.
Okay.
Launch of Digicel in 2001, simply because I was just 22 at the time and I had never managed any PR execution before.
Okay.
But my boss at the time said, boy, Andre,
this is you.
You're going to deal with the PR for all of the Digicel launch, for all of Carnival sponsorship that year, which was your first year doing Carnival, for every activation for Digicel in these 4 months leading up to their launch in Jamaica in 2001, you are going to do the PR fight.
Were you nervous or were you just excited about, hey, listen, man, I can do this?
Both. Because, I know I had the tools, but, you know, you don't want to fail. Because, you know, if you fail, not only would you be letting down your boss and the company, but you have a client who is paying you quite a bit of money to achieve certain deliverables in terms of PR and all of that. But definitely, I had the support, I had the leadership, I had the guidance, and definitely I backed myself at the time, and the launch was a success.
Talking about failure and success, without giving name, how did you deal with, you know, a particular project that you think wasn't as successful as you wanted it to be, certainly in the professional realm or probably even personal? How did you deal with that for certain, you know, the youngsters who are listening to this, in terms of just making that comeback, bounce back from that and you know, moving on?
One of the first golf tournaments I ever managed at Sportsmax. Mm-hmm. This one sticks out in my mind because it was the first golf tournament I'd ever done. Being sponsored by a financial institution, I knew I was going to knock it out of the park. I was ready. We had nice big media launch. We had youth clinic. We had registration was going well. And then leading up to the day of the tournament now, the week of the tournament, I think everything is going smoothly. All branding, everything going nice. I'm sorting out food for the day. I'm sorting out decor, music, all the operations, the operation side, the scores, making sure everybody taken care of. Everybody have them pretty polo shirt and them nice Greg Norman type straw hat, the Bose hat to them where Greg Norman used to wear. And then we realized a couple days before that we scheduled the tournament on the same day of a one-day match at Sabina Park. Now, at the time, the West Indies team wasn't where they were now.
Right.
The mound was still the mound. Mm-hmm. The mound party stand at Sabina Park was still an extremely popular attraction. And the clientele for the tournament, both competitors and persons who would come out to the clubhouse and partake and build a vibe, were many of the same people who would have gone to the mound to watch cricket that day. And when all was said and done, the turnout was poor. The vibe wasn't the same because you could see that some of the top players decided not to play in the match.
They decided not to play in the tournament because
they were going to go to Sabana Park and enjoy themselves on the moon. And the event just turned out to be a bit of a downer. It didn't really come off. Some of the top players weren't there. We executed it, but it really wasn't. And you know, that something as simple as scheduling, something as simple as that could have been avoided. So that was one of the first ones that really it taught me a lesson, because a lot of money could have been saved. Yeah. But yeah, that one stands out.
But didn't you? Okay, so Sportsmax came after you worked with the Sabana Park group with the Mound, because you had worked on that project
simultaneously. Because right. At the time,
so you caused a clash, or was
well, I caused a clash because I could have rescheduled the golf tournament. West Indies Cricket Board scheduled the tour, so that can't move.
Right, you understand?
But yeah, at the time, Sportsmax for a few years, Sportsmax was also the company that managed the party stand at Sabina.
Right, that's correct.
So that was also a part of my portfolio, dealing with the party stand.
And I'm sure you were there doing the activation for the Mound.
Definitely. The funny thing is, when you work on the Mound, you actually don't get to watch the cricket.
Right.
Because you literally are on your feet. Working on the Mound is difficult because literally people think that you're on the Mound and, oh, you work on the Mound, you party and drink all day. And literally, all I do is I'm on my feet and I'm drinking water for the whole day, because you're there from 5:30 a.m. And you don't leave until it's over, and you're back and forth, because I was in charge of the entertainment. I was in charge of the sound, the artists, the concessionaires, the security, cleanup, stuff like that.
I can't tell
the
you
bar,
that.
The bar staff. So it was just that. Yeah. That is a tough one, because especially when you have on the morning, you have rowdy patrons. They're getting intoxicated, so that working on the Mound can be challenging, but it was rewarding. Definitely,
I can tell you that for me, when I'm on the Mound, I don't get to watch much cricket.
There you go.
The Mound is a special part of the grounds. I don't know why they're shaking their head.
well, I mean, they'll find CPL is coming up, and they have a new iteration of the party stand, so that has been doing pretty well for the last couple of years, with the way in which CPL is at our T20 cricket is now, you know, the new.
What do you see in the horizon, Andre, in terms of sport, sponsorship, branding opportunities, and just the Jamaican sporting landscape? Well, not just Jamaica certainly, but the Caribbean sporting landscape.
Well, definitely there will continue to be more opportunities. What needs to happen though is that, I mean, you will always, the talent is there across the region. However, what, in addition to developing the talent, what needs to happen is we need to develop our players and our associations as brands.
Right.
So we're still in an era of where Jamaican track and field in particular, because of the dominance of Usain Bolt and the sprinters, really created a very unique and special brand. You know, the Jamaica track and field brand is, you know, that is something which has a lot of equity and is something which has done a lot for Jamaica. So the thing is to really make sure that we, in addition to developing talent, make sure that we build a culture within our athletes of realizing that, in addition to focusing on bettering their skills, bettering their game in whatever sport it is, they have to create and make sure that they cultivate their own personal brand.
Okay.
Whether it's your social media presence, whether it's your profile, making sure that our athletes understand that they are a brand and they have a lot of leverage, they have a lot of marketability if they are managed and, you know, if they are developed properly. You know, we have to change the mindset of the athletes and the mindset of our associations. You see, looking at sports like basketball, the NFL, English Premier League, Champions League, you see that players market themselves in a completely different way. The level of their social media platforms, level at which they promote and make the best of their, you know, corporate social responsibility, their personal, you know, their foundation, they create personal brands which do so much for them off the field or off the pitch or off the court. And we're not talking about superstars. We're talking about players who are not all-stars, not pro bowlers, not in the top 20 or top 50. But when you go to their social media page and you see how they and their team has, you know, has created, you know, created a plan for them, you can see that a lot of thought and a lot of insight has gone into making sure that these players maximize the short time that they have doing whatever they do. So definitely our players need to understand that at whatever level they are, they are a brand. They have to maximize and they have to make sure that they position themselves in a way in which will be a good representation of themselves, something that will be appealing to sponsors, and something that they can really monetize, because at the end of the day, that's what it's all about.
Amazing. Listen, Andre, we could talk forever, especially we haven't even talked about Liverpool.
That's right.
Which is crucial, but we won't do it today.
We can't torture your producer, who is a suffering Chelsea supporter.
Yeah, I don't even know how people support Chelsea, but we'll leave that for another day. Andre, thank you very much for stopping by, man.
Glad to be here.
So, listen, on behalf of studio engineer Andre, producer Roshika, thanks for joining us on this episode of The Drive Phase. As always, make sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Stitcher, which is also one of my favorite, so you'll never miss an episode. Remember, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes or any podcast that you use. Go tell a friend about the show so that they too can spread the word. Feel free to send feedback, comments, or questions to thedrivephase@gmail.com. Or look us up on Twitter. We're there. We're also on Facebook, The Drive Phase GA. Remember the hashtag TDP. Until next time, see you then.